Daddy was gone, we had third floor in our house. Only that was where the basement was, there we had boards, but otherwise it was all dirt. So one day, Albert found a big shiny bug under the bed. It has worked its way through the dirt, had a little hole made, and there he was. When he would fall on the back, he couldn't get back up because he was so slippery. And he took that bug in his hands, in his fingers, and then he came and he was going to put it, tease us kids. He said, I'm going to put this in back of your neck. And oh, we looked at that bug and it looked so horrible. All those, he must have had dozens of feet on it. And he was just wriggling around, and we just hide, crawl under the bed and on top of the bed. And Mama was sitting there watching. She never said, Albert, don't do that, scare the kids with that shiny bug. And I don't know what he did with that after he had lots of fun with us. And Mama just laughed how he teased us kids. And she was so nice to us, never. When we want to play hide-and-go-seek, we'd crawl under the beds or on top of the beds, and she would never say anything because that was the only excitement in the fun we had in the winter time. It was too cold to go out and play around the house. And one time we heard the old people say, well, you throw a cat, makes a difference. How you throw a cat, she'd always fall on the feet. So we had an old cat, I don't know if she was old or in a way she was a cat around, and some of our neighbors' children came. And Mama had company, it was a Sunday afternoon. So we go in the big barn, we had a great big barn. You could drive in two teams of horses and drive out the other end again. And everybody had these huge barns where all the hay and everything was stored for the winter. So we take that old cat and we crawl on top of the barn and then we throw it down. And that poor cat, she didn't always fall on her feet. She fell on the side and yuck. She would just, then one of the kids going catch her again pretty soon. Mary said, nah, that's enough. We won't do that. She's not falling on her feet in a way. So we let her go. But poor little cat, I just felt so sorry. What dumb kids won't do. And they think it's fun where somebody else is being tortured. And then we fooled around there and all at once Mary, there was either it was by accident that a hoe fell over, no, a fork fell over, and Mary jumped and she jumped on that, from the second floor down on the hay, and there was this fork where you put hay to the horses, and she picked her right through the foot. And oh, she hung in to Mama, and Mama had this company, and so she says, well, what else are you guys doing in that barn? So she put it in a dish, and she poured kerosene on it, and she had to hold it a while in the kerosene, and then she washed it and wrapped it up, and that was the end of it. But she limped around for a few days. But when too many kids are together and they don't know what to do, they sure getting into trouble, and if they take it out on a poor little cat. And the best time for in the winter I liked was Christmas. Mama went to town and got some pound of raisins and some little cookies to hang on the tree, and she always hid a bushel basket full of apples, and we hung that on the tree. The boys ran to the woods and got the tall tree that they could fasten on the top of the ceiling and then down to the floor. And it was nice. They put some paper, little chain around it, and all kinds of good decorations, and a few nuts, walnuts, and a few apples. But by the time half the Christmas was gone, then the tree looked so sad already. Everybody went past there and took a candy cane or a cookie, but Mama would bake a kuchen then, and she also made these donuts. And then they went to the church to hear the children say their poems and so on and so forth, have the program, and then we come home. And then we have a nice big donut supper. And oh boy, that was so good. And then the few ornaments on the tree, and then a few little candles that we light, and we were very careful so it wouldn't fall over. And then we stand around the Christmas tree and we sing Silent Night and all these little German songs, like Christmas Baum, and it was just such a beautiful time of the year. And I will never forget that all the time that until I was 10, I was only one time in the church on Christmas Eve, because some of us children always had to stay home and be with the little children, and then also be in the house because encounter fire or something. So then the bigger children that went to school, they had little songs or poems to say, and so they got to go, and I only was allowed one time. I think it was the last year we were home, I went to the program. And I don't know, it was just too good and too nice, and I guess that's why I couldn't go. I think I said this on one of the other tapes, I'm not sure, but one time my sister and my brother-in-law, they went to the market, and so they dropped off that little boy by my mama, and she took care of him, and I got to go along to the market, and they was buying a bucket, and there was everybody brought their goods and put it on the ground, and if somebody had lots of bushel baskets full of onions, well then he had them all on the ground. There were no sheds or anything, and so all these buckets were on the ground. And Millie said, "You hold this one," she said. She gave me that bucket and she said, "You hold it." And other people came and they pushed me on the side. I was so little yet, but I held on to the bucket. And he bought another, he didn't know, Dan didn't know that Millie had given me a bucket. So he went and he paid for one bucket. And when the people were all come around, and I guess the lady that sold him, she didn't even know it. And when we came further away, Millie said, "Well, how come that she has a bucket? Did you pay for both?" He said, "No, I just bought the one." She says, "Well, we're taking this back." He says, "Oh, no, we're not taking it back. We're taking it home to Mama. She needs a milking bucket." And so he stole that. Either I did or he did, but he didn't pay for it. He says she made enough on those buckets. And so I brought it home, and that was the first time I was to the market, and right away I stole a bucket. And he gave it to Mama, and Mama says, "Well, I really don't want it." He says, "You take it. It's yours." And she took care of that little boy for her. He was a cute little fellow. And when I was watching him one time, I stood him up on the little day bed, and then I was going to measure him how tall he was, and he could stand up already by himself, and then I pulled his legs right under him away, and he fell on there on the wall with his head, and he started to scream, and my sister and my brother-in-law, they were in the workshop, they come running in, and what happened, and I didn't say anything, I just ran out. They didn't spank me or anything, but I really did need a spanking at that time. That was not the way to measure a kid. But that was me. I was too dumb. But I liked it there. They were so nice to me. And one time Millie went to town, and I stayed home with that little boy all by myself, and she gave me a half a French bread and told me to make some tea and soak the bread up and then squash it down and feed the little boy. And she was nursing him yet, and boy, oh boy, he started to cry, and I did my best, and I was only 8 then, and left alone with that little child, and he was about, oh, maybe 5 months old or so. And Dan's brother came over and stayed with me for a while. But I managed. And then Millie brought me home a pair of little shoes. And they were button shoes up. And that was the first pair of shoes in my life. And I think it was the last one until I came to America. And Dan bought me a pair. But I don't know what happened to those shoes. I must have outgrown them. And oh, I wish I'd have kept those little shoes. Wouldn't that be a treasure? But in one time she brought me a handkerchief. And when we went down to the river on Easter morning, Dan came over and Mary, and they was going to make the river holy, like I said before. Put that holy water on a Russian priest, and I lost it on the way going down there. And so I was really sad. That was a sad Easter for me, but otherwise it was nice. We went to the Russian church and we had so much fun, how he made everybody's food holy, you know. And they had to fast, I think it was 6 weeks or something, not hardly eat anything, just a little soup. And they brought their food down there to be sprinkled with that holy water, and they just grabbed their food and ran home, and then they really ate. So all this silly, dumb stuff. But in one way I look back, and it was an entertainment, and it was really nice and fun. One time I went to a Russian wedding, and then the church there too, and I saw how they were married, and came home and I tried to explain it to Dan what has happened. And on Easter day, they let the kids go up in the attic and ring the bell. Oh boy, and that church bell was a-going practically all day long. Everybody wanted to ring the bell. So we had really good time in that Russian village there. I just wish I could have stayed a little longer, but then I had to go home and work. I think I said this little story already before, but I will put it on here in a way. My mama had a old uncle, his name was Bain, and he used to come on the place where I was born there, and we had that windmill, and he would always go and sleep under the windmill. It was a great big room under the windmill where they had the grain and stuff stored that there was in the flour. So he would always go there and sleep. And he would go begging bread. And he came around when we left that windmill and we came back to the village where we live now, and Daddy went away. He used to come twice a year, in the spring of the year and fall of the year. And oh, when Uncle Bain would come, boy, were we kids in seventh heaven. He would bring us some rabbit bread. And he had us so brainwashed. And when he came down and he greeted Mama and so on, then he said to us children, "Well, have you all been good since I've been here last? What have you been doing?" and so on. And oh, well, he said, "If you're all right, then I'll give you each a treat." And he had this gunny sack, and in that gunny sack he had little tiny bags. For one, when he had, maybe he got a donut from somebody and the other piece of bread, and he had it in another little bag. And he would open up and he gave us each a piece of dry bread. And he said that was rabbit bread. And we were so ignorant, we really thought it was better bread than what Mama baked. It tastes so good. And then he would eat his supper and talk to Mama, and then the boys would go out and get in a couple arms full of straw. And we had a nice little corner where it was not so drafty behind the, by the bed there, by the stove, and was not so drafty away from the door, and the boys would bring in two arms full of straw, and he would just, no blanket or anything on the straw, he just lied right down on the straw with his clothes on, his boots on, and Mama usually gave him another something. And then he put his coat over him, And he was warm, and he slept all night. In the morning he ate breakfast and washed himself up and so on. He says, "Well, Christina, I guess I'll be going to see you in fall of the year again." But he wouldn't give us no more Hasenbrot, because that rabbit bread, because he took it, he had a certain place where he took that bread and he could sell it. And then when he had so much money, I don't know how much it took, and he got himself a little tiny can of whiskey. And then he had that in his pocket, nipped on it once in a while. And he was, his, one of his, I don't think it was his daughter or niece or something, she went with us to Siberia, and she got lost when we had to go with Sam to the hospital. Well, they sent her further into Siberia, so we don't know whatever happened to her, poor Paulina. But we sure liked our Uncle Bame. He was really nice. He told us so many nice stories about the forest and about what has happened in the forest, just the book stories that he remembered. So, and then the boys brought home a book from school, and there were lots of German little stories, how they went traveling through the woods, and they met this one, and they met that one, and they, from all kinds of goodies things. And he remembered that. But he sure was a good uncle to us. So that's another little story that we liked so much. We would talk about that later on and tell every children in the village how our uncle gave us some rabbit bread to eat. On Friday night, my daddy would always go to the schoolhouse to practice the choir. He took his violin and he went down, and he was the choir director. And from there he had a friend there named Schlender, and so he went down after the choir practice, and he stayed till late at night. And those guys, they were so crazy about playing cards. And I often thought, well, Daddy was so gifted in playing the harmonica, and then or accordion, whatever it is, and then the violin and all that, and he never took time out to teach Dan or so to play that. But he was very gifted when it came to church music, and he played when the wedding was, he played a wedding march on his violin. We had a lovely choir, and so we just, it was a sad morning when Daddy left. He said goodbye to everybody, and I was so bashful at that time and so little. I hid behind a tree. We had about six cherry trees, only one sour cherry tree, and one apple tree, and then a couple pear trees. And I hid behind one of the trees, and there was quite a few neighbors around there saying goodbye to Dad. And one of the villages, the man, he took him down to the depot. It was about 22 miles to go to the train depot from where we lived. And it was sort of a sad time to see him go. That was in spring of the year after he had the land planted in. And then late in the same year, he already sent for Tilly. He had enough money made already, and he was doing carpenter work here. And when he came down the first year, he found out that in North Dakota that you could make twice as much money on going in the threshing harvest. So he went down there with some other men, and they worked in the harvest, and they was threshing by farmers the grain. And then he had enough money already for sending for Tilly, and she came. She must have come before Christmas or so with another girl and two or three other men from our village. And that was not such a sad day when Tilly went away, because after that he was gone, she turned sort of naughty. We had a neighbor boy there, and his name was Emmanuel, and she sort of ran around late at night with him and all this, and when Mama said, Dina, you go and call Tilly and we want to all go to bed and close the door. And then she got mad at me, and she was not too nice to get along. And then what we didn't like, Mary, Tilly, Mary and I, we slept in front of the bed, the tree, and then on the foot end, Sam, and we were so crowded in, and the boy slept in another bed, and Mama and the little baby in one. So we had three beds in the kitchen, and then later on we moved in the big room for the winter because the kitchen was just too cold. In there we had a iron stove in there where we could get the house warmer. So we were not too close with Tilly. And I think she must have been 16 when she was just confirmed that spring in through school then. And so she just, Daddy sent for her and she came down, and the first job she got was working in the Whitcomb Hotel doing dishes. And that was a pretty nice job. I think she made a dollar and a half or $2 a day and got her eats. So that was pretty good. But she stayed with my Aunt Newman. And so we had more room in the bed after Tilly was gone. But those were sure nice evenings when we could horse around and play hide and go seek and all that. And sometimes we had an old grandma that lived not far from us. Her name was Mauser. And she came over and she just would sit there in a chair, tired, wore out, half sick. And she says, oh, how hard is life when you get old? And I thought to myself, life is fun, life is pleasure. Just run and run and never get tired. But she was so wore out in such a big family. Now that she was old, nobody cared for her. And she came over maybe once or twice a week. In summertime, we would sit outside. And she'd come over and sit and talk with Mama. And that's life. When you're young, you have too much ambition. When you're old, you can't move. Talking about when you're young, you have so much ambition and good memories. When I was at my sister Millie's place, and I think I was 7 that spring, then I got to be 8. And I only made that trip once with Dan. He took me down real early on Sunday morning, and I was supposed to stay with Millie for that winter, and then next summer I came home, like I said, half of the summer. Then Mama came and got me. But, and I only made that way one time. And then my brother-in-law had borrowed some money from my Mama, and so they gave the money, I think it was 5 rubles or something like that. And Millie and him put it in my upper part of my skirt, my dress. And then they told me where to go and go home and give Mama that money, because she needed that money. And he said a certain day that he was going to pay it back, and he kept his word. So I went all by myself, and I think it must have been at least 3 miles. And I remembered when we went down the hill, now I had to crawl back up, there was a real steep hill, and so on and so forth, and I made it home. And when I got home, about maybe, not even a fourth of a mile, there was a man with a wagon, our neighbor, and he stopped and he said, Adina, get on the wagon, he said, and he took me home, the last of the half a mile. And I don't know how I could find going there once and then making the journey back home all by myself. I was so very good in remembering. I don't know why I lost my memory, but it's just gone. I would hear a song, but we would go to the woods on Sunday afternoons on with the Krause, the kids, and Millie Krause, and she knew all kinds of these nice little German songs that you would sing. And like Achtu Lieber Augustine and so on and so forth. And I just hear it once or twice, and then I knew it. I remember it word for word. And also when I came to this country and I went to church and I heard a song once or twice, I didn't need no songbook. I just knew it by heart. And Daddy couldn't figure out how I could remember those songs. But the remembering came natural to me, and now I just can't find nowheres, and I can't remember anything. Now I think back of that dear old grandma that used to come to my mama's place and said how sad the old years are. Can't remember, and you're not feeling good, and you're tired, and people just don't understand it. But that's the way I guess it's made. It's supposed to be that way, I guess. When we're old, we just wear out and give up. One time I was at the Russian wedding. My brother-in-law and my sister, they was invited. He was the businessman now there, and being the blacksmith man, and so he was invited to this wedding. So we didn't go to church, but we went to the house. And as soon as we got in the house, well, they had, the Russian houses have two rooms, what they call a big, big kitchen and then a big living room. And in the kitchen there is table and some chairs and a big oven. And we cook the bread in there. They also cook in that. It's sort of like a fireplace. And then on top of the oven they sleep. It's nice and warm. And they have a big platform before you crawl on the oven to sleep. On top of the oven they have a platform and there they sleep also. Then in the living room they have usually two beds and a table and a few chairs and a picture of Jesus or something there. That's about all the Russian houses have. So we came into this Russian house, and right away my brother-in-law and Millie, they were taken into that big room, and there was the table. They sat down and they gave them each a glass of vodka, and my just a little tiny glass, and my sister Millie, she just couldn't drink that strong stuff. But he gobbled it down in no time. But and then the Russian women, they took a hold of me. And boy, this one came with the crab pirog, and that one came with this, and that one came. And they just about fed me to death. And so nice and kind to the children. I haven't been to any wedding yet where the children were so taken care of as of the Russian weddings. And we went quite often to not only weddings, but just to, let's say, like a party or something. Somebody was celebrating something. Well, the older people, they were really shoved in that big room, and there they had a bottle of vodka and a few little glasses around, and then they would have kielbasa with this sausage and then bread and so on, and they would have talk and laugh and have a good time. But I've never seen anybody drunk, and as many times as I went, even my brother-in-law probably could take one or two little drinks, and then he carried his little boy home in the arm, and Millie on one of his side. But Millie was not, it was too bitter for her, she said she couldn't take it. But the children were so well taken care of and fed. They stayed in the kitchen, what they called, where the oven was, the bake oven and all that. But the Russian people sure do cook good. They make this what we call this krab pirog or any of this with beans in or with sour cabbage in. And when they roast pork, oh, it has the most wonderful taste. They roast it in that open oven, and it just browns on either side. And maybe it tastes so good because the person didn't get it quite often, just once when they had weddings or parties. But I just love to go with my sister and brother-in-law to these parties. I really got... And then before we went away, the children all got what they called tsukerke. That means a candy. They all gave us a candy. And in Russia, you never bought any.